Hello, my friends, and welcome back to the 35th episode of Strange Origins. Today I have an episode that I've been promising you for a while, but that has been a difficult one for me to bring myself to do. That's because witches are just such a large topic. It's difficult to know where to start and where to end. But that also means I have a lot to dive into, and I know you'll want to learn all about it right along with me. So let's dive in. My first episode on witches was my 14th episode. So if you want to pause this one and listen to that one first, I really don't mind. I'll be here waiting for you when you get back. In my previous episode, I discussed the practices of witches throughout history, the difference between light and dark magic, general misconceptions about witches, and the stories of witches like Hecate, Erichtho, the Witch of Endor, Mary Johnson, and even the Blair Witch, which I kind of touched on. In this episode, I wanted to dissect the history behind certain witchy things, give you a few more famous witches in history to add to your magic catalog, and for those male listeners, I wanted to dissect the concept of warlocks and wizards. Just last week, as I was cooking dinner, I opened the door to let my nephew in from playing outside, and in popped what looked like a shadow out of the corner of my eye. When I turned around, I realized it was a black cat. She was pregnant and obviously in search of food. After asking around a bit, I realized it was a neighbor's cat, and they had taken her in while she was getting ready to give birth. I pet her and then let her outside so she could find her owner. I've always loved black cats, though I've never had one myself. I always thought that if I ever did get a black cat, I would name her Lucifer, maybe call her Lucy for short, and it would be our little joke. I know that in the US at least, black cats can be seen as bad omens. But researching black cats, I realized that they actually are viewed pretty differently in various cultures. In Japan and in Celtic countries, black cats are actually thought to bring good health and prosperity. Pirates once believed that if a black cat walks onto a ship and then walks right off, that ship would be doomed to sink. But if the cat stayed, they would be good to go. Another interesting belief was that if a young woman owned a black cat, she was sure to have many suitors. But the biggest belief about black cats, due to the popularity of Halloween as a holiday, is that they are linked to the existence of evil witches. The reason black cats have been associated with the idea of witchcraft is because witches were believed to have familiars, or even to be able to shapeshift into cats themselves, like Hedwig in the Harry Potter universe or Salem in Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Familiars are tasked with protecting those learning or practicing magic and serve them in whatever they need. Besides cats and owls, familiars could also be dogs, ferrets, frogs, rabbits, or even rats. The witch would feed their familiar, and in return, they would perform tasks for them. Some deeply believed that familiars were fairies in animal form, which makes sense when I think back on my fairies episode, where I talked about how brownies or hobgoblins would help out with chores if you left a bowl of cream out for them every night. They may even be related to the myth of a fylgja, which means to accompany from Norse legend. In these stories, familiars are a person's double that can shapeshift into animal form in order to perform other duties. Something interesting about fylgja is that it can also translate to mean the afterbirth of a child. In certain stories, the familiar or doppelganger of a person would depend on which animal would show up during the birth of a child, or which animal would eat the afterbirth that was left over. That is why familiars are most often animals that are referred to as carrion eaters, or more specifically, those that are willing to eat the dead or decaying bodies left over in nature, if they have to. Have you ever heard of people dying alone in their houses and then being slowly eaten by their cats? That's pretty much what I mean. Another reason black cats have been believed to have been witches' familiars was their longer lifespan. According to the National Institute of Health, it's been found that the gene that makes a cat's fur black can also protect them against certain diseases. They also were pretty nocturnal animals, and it was thought that they were the spirits of humans who had performed bad deeds while living and were therefore cast back to earth in animal form. In Egyptian mythology, it is Bastet, a goddess of domesticity and fertility, that is more known for her connection to black cats than anything else. She is often depicted as a black cat or a woman with the head of a cat. In Greek mythology, Zeus's wife Hera transformed a servant, Galinthius, into a black cat. Basically, Galinthius performed a good deed in helping to stop a plan Hera had to keep Hercules from being born first and becoming the ruler of Mycenae. It's complicated, but Galinthius then went on to become an assistant to Hecate, who, as I've mentioned before, is the goddess of witchcraft and the underworld. That probably played a large part in forming our modern association between black cats and hell, or the underworld. In Norse mythology, black cats actually have a connection to Freya, the goddess of love and fertility, who is where we get the modern word for Friday. She was known for employing two giant cats to pull her chariot around. They were a gift from Thor himself and apparently were Skogkat, which are also known as Norwegian forest cats. While regular house cats can weigh around 9 pounds at most, Skogkat are known to grow up to 20 pounds. They're giant. Like Freya, there's another fairly popular goddess who shows up in Mabinogion, which is a story collection from medieval Wales. She's referred to as Great Queen or White Witch, and is also known for being the inspiration, in a roundabout way, to the Fleetwood Mac song, Rhiannon. Rhiannon was known for slowly riding around on a beautiful white horse, and even though suitors would run as fast as they could to catch up to her on their own steeds, they never quite could. She also has a strange connection to birds, which may have been a part of the foundation for the concept of witches' familiars. The Rhiannon was stated to be intelligent, beautiful, politically strategic, and even extremely generous, she was still feared for her magical abilities. In the end, she was blamed for the tragic abduction of her newborn son. After the 6 maids who were watching him fell asleep, he was kidnapped by a monster. To avoid blame, they killed a puppy and smeared the blood on Rhiannon's face. She was then not only accused of murdering her son, but also of eating him, which is pretty indicative of future accusations made against witches in that they loved to eat kids, such as Hansel and Gretel. Another symbol of witchcraft is the black cauldron, which I personally love to bring out every Halloween and put root beer and some dry ice into. While I had assumed the history of the cauldron would be a boring one, I ended up being pretty wrong. While they were great for cooking food over a large fire, they also played their part in several magic stories. Along with famously being what witches prepared potions in, or what they used to cook children in, cauldrons actually had a pretty cool reputation back in the day. A famous cauldron in Celtic mythology had the ability to bring dead soldiers back to life, allowing them to go back out on the battlefield and keep fighting. This allowed the army that controlled the cauldron to be able to win any war that they fought. In the Mabinogion, which I just mentioned as being a collection of Welsh medieval tales, A goddess named Carigdwen is famous for using a giant black cauldron to create potions in. In one story, she even sets about creating a potion that will make up for just how ugly her only son is by making him infinitely wise. Of course, this doesn't work, as the servant tasked with stirring it for a year and a day accidentally swallows it himself. In these neo-Wiccan times, cauldrons symbolize the idea of the goddess because of their resemblance to pregnant, fertile women, and also at times represents the idea of Earth because they both act as working tools. Today you can buy them inscribed with various symbols of power in New Age or metaphysical stores if you're looking for things to add to your ritual altar, which, by the way, is another fascinating concept I will have to get into in another episode. So despite all of these examples of good goddesses or practitioners of magic I've regaled you with, witches are still misconstrued as being malicious, evil, or wholly demonic. One of the reasons for this, from a historical perspective, is actually pretty easy to explain, but also kind of awkward to talk about. In the 12th to 14th centuries, in large monasteries that housed monks, something that the church began to question at the time was the morality of something that I'm sure happened frequently because of human nature, which was wet dreams. Monks reported that these dreams would often happen because of what they would refer to as nightmares, wherein a human female figure would sit on top of them. Instead of explaining away these events as a healthy part of human life, they began to assume that it was the evil doings of witches, who were there to procreate with them and to produce demonic offspring. This, in my book, is kind of a giant leap, but then again, I'm not a 14th century monk. This led to an unfair assumption that it was feminine sexuality that was, by its very nature, demonic. If it had been nuns who had made this accusation, who knows where we would be today with our modern definition of witchcraft. Maybe if this hadn't happened at all, witchcraft wouldn't be so linked to the idea of deviant or demonic sexuality. Who knows? I just like to put these ideas out there and then leave you to ruminate on them. Something else I want to drive home in this episode is that although women are famous for being the ones to adopt witchcraft or magic, they weren't the only ones. Though it was 75% women that made up the group that were accused of witchcraft, 1 in 5 of them were actually men. That was only in certain places, such as England or Hungary. In Moscow, male witches outnumbered women by 7-3, and in Normandy, 3-1. The term warlock was first created around 1000 AD and translates to mean breaker of oaths or deceiver. Something interesting was that the word was used during the witch trials in Europe, and then a few rare occurrences in Salem, Massachusetts. But after that, the word kind of died out. That is, until the spiritualism craze of the Victorian age that I just can't seem to stop talking about, and also the neo-pagan revolution of the 1960s. A history of warlocks is difficult to pin down, but a history of wizards, which are categorized as only slightly different, is not. The first wizard comes from the 12th century British author Geoffrey of Monmouth. In these tales, Geoffrey took the stories of two very different men and combined them. The first man was Myrddin Wilt, a prophet and proclaimed madman who fled to the woods to receive prophecies after experiencing the horrors of war and witnessing his family be murdered. The other man was a Romano-British war leader named Ambrosius Aurelianus, who had famously won an important battle against the Anglo-Saxons in the 5th century. With those two inspirations, the figure of Merlinius Ambrosius, or as we like to call him, Merlin, was etched into stone. Something I had never realized about Merlin was that he was known for being a Cambion, which is a being created by a human woman, and an incubus, which is a male demon. While he was born inherently evil, his experiences growing up in the mortal world shaped him into a wise man who engineered the birth of Arthur and therefore decided the fate of Britain itself, in later versions of the story, that is. Two of my favorite warlocks, which I had the chance to grow up with, were Dumbledore from the Harry Potter universe, and also Gandalf from the Lord of the Rings saga. It's funny that these were the two most influential figures in the books and films that I grew up with, because they oddly looked a lot alike. This is because they were most likely inspired by the image of Merlin as a mage. The archetype of the mage, which in the world of philosophy is the character of the old man with white hair, maybe a wooden wand or cane, who has lots of experience and wisdom. They're usually scholars, collectors of ancient artifacts, they're politically strategic, and they are usually advisors to those who are less experienced in the ways of the world. They also serve as a moral compass for younger characters who are questioning the things going on around them, such as love or war. It's funny to me that mages are revered and beloved by those around them, while the idea of a hag, who is pretty much the feminine equal to the mage, is someone to avoid. In most stories that I've read that involve either a mage or a hag, those characters are just as susceptible to human error as their human counterpart. They can believe in good, but somehow accidentally perform evil. Or they can simply just succumb to bouts of greed, desire, or pride. The downfall of Merlin was the fact that he desired a much younger woman as his lover, a woman who would later turn out to be the Lady of the Lake. After sharing all of his magic and secrets with her, she trapped him in a hawthorn tree, where legend states he still resides, waiting for someone to help him escape. One of my favorite movies on the precarious nature of witchcraft is the 1996's The Craft. In the film, it's said of magic that it is neither good or bad, because no one can be wholly good or wholly bad. Instead, it is somewhere in the middle, in the gray area. One of my favorite quotes from that movie is that true magic is neither black nor white. It's both, because nature is both, loving and cruel all at the same time. End quote. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to go on these weird little journeys with me. I hope you learned something. And if you enjoy my show, please go rate me on iTunes, as it helps other people find me as well, who are just as interested in weird history as we are. Or just go follow me on Instagram. I would love to hear what your favorite episode has been so far, or even if you have ideas for future ones. Stay safe out there. Try to stay in the lighter shade of the gray area, if you can. Oh, and don't forget to keep it strange.